Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I shared a great little video on Twitter today of Donald Sutherland in the movie Hunger Games as President Snow and Donald Trump. And, you know, the parallels are there. And it's it gave me one of those thoughts where, you know, I look at the book 1984. You know, George Orwell in 1949 wrote basically the Republican playbook on media misinformation and groupthink and all of the stuff that we see at Fox News. And it got me thinking that, you know, the guy who wrote The Hunger Games pretty much is the rise of the Trump era. I mean, we have now moved into, understand, you know, Trump didn't read The Hunger Games, probably watched the book or watched the movie. But this is just one of those things where, when I read 1984 as a kid, I said, no, this is I don't want this. When I saw the movie The Hunger Games and going, no, this isn't what we want. Sadly, there are those who go, this is exactly what we want. And here to share some thoughts on, well, why he did it and is he responsible? I've asked Billy Ray to come talk with us. He's an Oscar-nominated screenwriter. He is the screenwriter who brought us The Hunger Games. Billy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's a pleasure. It's flattering to be asked.
So, you're going to take that? I'm going to blame you for Trump.
Yeah, I can take it. First of all, I want to make sure that we give credit to Suzanne Collins and Gary Ross, who shared screenplay credit with me on the movie, and Gary directed it. I consider it very much his movie. You know, always happy to have my name on a hit. That's a great thing. But it would not be correct to say that I'm the guy who wrote that movie. We all did. But in answer to your question, do I see parallels between President Snow and Donald Trump? It's hard not to, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And the thing is, you know, when we see these kind of things, and, you know, I remember when it came out, my daughter loves the series. I remember, you know, having the conversation of, you know, this is telling us the world that we don't want. And yet some will see it as, hey, this is how we should be running things. And clearly that's where we are in this country.
Well, you know, it's funny. When that book was offered to me the first time, I had never heard of it before. And I walked into my house and I said to my kids, who I think were 19 and 14 at the time, what's The Hunger Games? And they both did, you know, that palm to the forehead thing that kids do when they realize their fathers are an idiot. Turns out they knew exactly what it was. I somehow, when I was writing my version of that movie, I decided to treat it like a true story. I decided to write it from a place of complete outrage that there was a government that would behave in that way and that would do those kinds of things to its citizens and particularly to its children. And that's why I think, that's why the script, the draft that I did, had the feeling that it had, because I wrote it like it was a true story, and it turns out it was.
No, sadly, it is, you know, life imitating art, as you put out today. And, you know, this is one of those moments where I'm hoping that we can maybe have that shake awake moment where you go, oh, wait a second. Maybe this isn't the world that we want. Maybe we want something a little bit better.
Well, you know, I do quite a bit of work with candidates who are running for office in Senate races and House races across the country. And the wide awake moment seems to be when President Trump took that trip to the church and held the Bible upside down. What I'm hearing from candidates in places like Oklahoma, Kansas, Ohio, Kentucky, not exactly, you know, blue hot spots, for some reason, that was the moment for a lot of evangelical women. That was the moment that they had just had too much. And there's been sort of a significant paring away of the support that the president enjoys from evangelical suburban women in places like Tulsa, Oklahoma City. Again, not exactly Democratic strongholds. That's where he started to lose them.
Yeah, and it's not just them now. I mean, I don't know if you saw the story yesterday, but the guy who was the co-founder of the Federalist Society came out and said that he should be impeached. Not just that, you know, he should be impeached, but that his motives were fascistic and that the Democrats were right for calling him a fascist. When the guy who co-founds the Federalist Society, who most people have never heard of, when that guy comes out from behind the curtain to speak and have his name known, that's trouble for Trump.
I would think so. But again, you know, if you go back and look at the things he did right after he was elected, before he'd even been inaugurated. You know, he went on this thank you tour, which was a series of political rallies. He held them only in red states, and of course held them only for people who were rabid supporters of his. This was never a presidency that tried to expand beyond its base. And, you know, politically, that seemed like a very dangerous strategy. Obviously, it's not a great way to govern, but I think he's now paying the price for it.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing, and this is where we're in this weird moment of, you know, people are awake, people are active, people are organizing for a whole a bunch of reasons, you know, race relations, you know, employment, you know, all kinds of stuff. And the tendency of this administration is, you know, as the video that is going around points out, is, you know, to crush it, to dominate, the strong iron fisted kind of response. And I think that's, I hope that's something that people turn away from.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think that's going to be dispositive in this. I really don't. I think people vote based on how their individual lives are being affected by a particular style of governance.
Right.
I don't think most Americans would feel that strongly about his personality. In other words, Trump voters, would they turn away from him because of his personality? I think they always knew what his personality was. I think what's actually dooming the Trump presidency, to the extent that I see it being doomed, is the response to COVID. That, you know, everybody understands, whether the politics of it are dealt with truthfully or not, if your mom's in a nursing home, or your kid just finished spring quarter on your couch, or you know, you lose your job in a factory because the factory shuts down, then you don't need Fox News to interpret for you what that means. It's affecting your life in a really real, in a very practicable way.
Right.
And then you'll make your decision.
And now that you have Mitch McConnell in the Senate taking the long weekend, on the day that the unemployment cliff happens and the next day rent is due, do you think that will have something to do with it? Do you think that's going to kind of shake those people awake?
This is kitchen table stuff. I don't think there are a lot of Americans right now sitting down and saying, boy, it really looks like fascism versus democracy. I think they're saying, we're not getting our $600 check. What do we do? How do we pay for things? You know, we don't have health insurance anymore. What do we do? Or you know, the rural hospital down the road is completely overwhelmed, and there are patients lining up in the parking lot. What do we do? That's the issue. You know, whenever I talk to candidates, I never talk to them about broad themes. It's always about healthcare, the cost of prescription drugs. You know, all over America, you've got people who are taking their medication every other day so they can stretch 30 pills into 60 days. You know, ultimately, you blame the president for that, as you should.
Yeah, it goes back to the James Carville thing. It's the economy, stupid, and it always is. You're absolutely right. But I still like to believe, and maybe it's just my belief in humanity that we're not going to allow a fascist-type dictator to run our country and do the strong-arm kind of things that someone like Trump has tendencies to want to go towards.
That's lovely. And I understand why you feel that way, but I believe that if he were a completely fascistic leader and the economy was great and everybody was somehow managing to survive, I think he'd be reelected.
So then let me ask you this then, because, you know, the Democrats have given Trump basically everything he wants during this virus. They gave him, the CARES Act with a giant pot of gold for corporate America, $500 billion. They've opened the purse strings and said, go. In fact, you know, the HEROES Act is, you know, a $3 trillion spending bill that, you know, will hopefully help prop up the economy a little longer. It seems like McConnell and the rest of them don't want the win.
I don't think that's true. Of course they want the win. Everybody wants the win. It's you have a president that ran on the idea of blowing up the federal government. And by the way, I completely get what was fun and what was funny about that for a Trump voter in 2016. I get that it was funny
to
watch him own the libs, because the truth is the Democratic Party had lost touch and did need a little bit of a comeuppance. But if you run on the idea of blowing up the federal government, it can't be that surprising 4 years later that there's no federal government in place to respond to a crisis. We don't have one. I mean, I just made this movie, a miniseries for Showtime that was an adaptation of James Comey's book, and it'll be on in late September. And when we were scouting D.C. for locations, there was one point where we went to the EPA because it had a beautiful lobby.
Right.
And I went there on a Thursday at 2:30. There was nobody there. I'm not talking about like a couple people there. There was nobody there. There were six security guards, you know, with the magnetometer that you got to walk through.
Right, right.
But there were no people in the building. It was Thursday at 2:30. I'm talking tumbleweeds. So you have a government that has been pared down. You know, 67% of the State Department isn't there anymore. And look at what he did to the CDC. And I mean, this was a conscious choice to strip the federal government away and let private industry take care of everything. Now you're facing a crisis that private industry will not contend with and that no individual can possibly combat, and there's no federal government in place to stop it. So to me, it's not about what Mitch McConnell wants or doesn't want. It's that there literally is no one there to fix this, and that was a design.
Yeah. No, and you're right. This is all by choice. And this isn't just Donald Trump, though. I mean, this has been the Republican brand for a while. This has been a party that tells us that government can't do it. We don't want government to do it. We want smaller, less intrusive, ineffective government. And this is what we've got.
Yeah, but what they were posing was a false choice, and the false choice is still in front of us. In other words, this is not a debate between big government and small government. This is a debate between effective government and inept government.
Right.
What's required now is a robust, muscular government, not a flabby government. And we don't have one.
And does Joe Biden bring that? Is a Biden presidency? Because, look, I don't know about you, but I have very little faith in this administration to lead us through this over the next couple of months. In fact, I fully expect them to do everything they can possibly do to make it worse. But does Biden pick up on the other side?
He has to, of course. You know, one thing that seems really clear to me is Democrats like to govern. They actually like the sort of policy wonkiness of governing. And I think the Democrats believe that government has a role to play in the well-being of its citizens. So, yes, of course, he'll be all over this because the not only the success of his presidency, should it come to pass, but the success of the republic is going to be completely dependent on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I'm curious, you know, as you're paying attention to the back and forth and the gamesmanship, because a lot of people love the horse race. You got any thoughts on the VP choice?
You know, I have no special insight into that. I mean, it seems to me like I don't know, if it were me, I think I'd pick Tammy Duckworth or Susan Rice, but it's not up to me, and no one in the party is calling me and asking me who I think you should pick.
Yeah, it's always fun to play the game and game that out a little bit, I think.
Absolutely.
Because this is a participatory thing. I believe that we still have some say in who our leaders are, no?
Well, there are two important questions to ask. One, is it someone who could step in and be president on day one?
Right.
That's a biggie. That's a big Susan Rice argument, right? Two, is it someone who politically does no harm? You don't expect the VP candidate to be bringing you votes. But if you're Joe Biden right now and you're ahead and you're playing with a lead, you just want someone who does no harm. And those two both qualify.
I'm right there with you. Billy, I appreciate the time. Good talking with you. Again, I'm still going to hold you accountable for the movie, though.
It's a pleasure. And if you wouldn't mind, I would love to come back in September and talk about the Comey rule.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Great.
Good stuff, Billy Ray. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Like I said, I still blame him for the Hunger Games movie and Donald Trump and the whole thing. Not really. Just kidding. But, you know, much in the same way I blame George Orwell for 1984 and Fox News. We're going to give him this. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the maybe election in November. Maybe Donald Trump tries to move it again. Who knows? And maybe how he's going to try and steal it. Up next, our good friend Greg Palast is going to be here to talk about his new book, How Trump Stole 2020. Quick break, right back with Greg. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.